There's one of the two.
And they go to the park. They have writers. I don't really like this pop there. Why did that?
Let's go ahead and reconvene. We have with us now to make a presentation the Alaska LNG Gas Line Project from the Alaska Gas Pipeline Port Authority. Rather than me droll on, I will stop there and welcome Mayor Hove and Mayor Cobb. And gentlemen, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate the invitation to be with you here this morning. We're going to be experiencing just a slight delay with a technical glitch, yeah. But we'll be ready to proceed here just momentarily. As soon as the DIN connector gets hooked to the computer.
It's over on this side. Sorry.
Is mine in your way?
Almost there. This one here is on this time.
I can't.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I could make a nice little comment about here about how this wouldn't be happening if it was another proposal.
Stay calm.
Just so you know, I could have made it.
All right.
We're ready now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's go ahead and call ourselves back to order. One thing I might point out for those of you out there who have not seen this presentation and would like to look at the screen, there's probably room for five or six of you back here. Don't be shy as we work our way through this. If you want to do that, feel free to do so. Having said that, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, it's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. What we are going to be presenting this morning is the work that has been performed so far, a description of the work that we are going to be engaged in the short, near-term future, and work that is of a longer time frame than that. The Alaska Gas Line Port Authority was formed by three municipalities, the City of Valdez, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the North Slope Borough, by an overwhelming vote of the voters in those three political subdivisions of the state in October. The average approval rate was 80%, and we were very encouraged by that. Board of Directors was subsequently formed from the three communities. There are three members, and from the North Slope Borough, those members are Mayor George Omlock, Richard Glenn, and Thomas Napagyak. From my borough, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, there is Barbara Schumann, who is present here today, former Attorney General Charlie Cole, and myself. And from the City of Valdez, John Kelsey, Dave Dingle, and Mayor Dave Cobb, who sits on my left. We also have engaged in a great number of discussions and have conducted a number of negotiations with various participants in this effort. Our first is the selection of Bechtel Company as the technical and development support arm of what we are doing. And they are present here today and represented by Barbara Treat. If you would stand, please, as I introduce you. Walt Parsons, Brent Scherfe, and Yasser Dib. We also have retained the services of what we think is one of the world's leading financial analysts in terms of LNG projects around the world. They have done the last six major projects that have been accomplished, and that will be in the form of Taylor DeYoung. And also we have established a relationship for the purpose of financial advisor a relationship with Merrill Lynch, who is represented here today by Brian Andrews, whom some of you may already know. We also have retained the services of what is one of the international leaders in the field of law regarding this issue, and they are represented here today by Rigdon Boykin, who is a partner with O'Melveny & Myers, our law firm represented by offices around the world, but more particularly for our purposes in New York and Washington, D.C. And our general counsel here in the state of Alaska is Walker, Walker, Wendland, and Osowski from Anchorage, and they are represented here today by Bill Walker. We are in discussions with other companies that are hopeful will engage with us in this enterprise, and notably among those is Williams Companies, which I know you all know as a pipeline operator of great renown in the lower 48 and elsewhere, and also for, in the case of my community, a refinery, and of course a retail distribution network in the state of Alaska, including Juneau. Williams Company is represented here today by Lou Puscani and Matt Gillis. Also, we have a very beneficial relationship with Yukon Pacific Corporation, which is the holder of permits that cover the construction and operation of a pipeline from the North Slope to an LNG plant in Valdez. And with us here today representing Yukon Pacific are Jeff Lowenfels and Wayne Lewis, and are very happy about this relationship. The project contemplates the treatment and transport of natural gas via pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, which would essentially parallel the existing TAPS line. It would vary up to, I think, half a mile or a third of a mile from TAPS from time to time, but fundamentally it does parallel that line. And in Valdez, the conversion of the natural gas to a liquid state by means of a plant located there, and then ultimately shipment to the LNG product to the Far East. The facilities required to accomplish these tasks would involve the construction and operation of a gas conditioning plant at Prudhoe Bay, which would remove water and carbon dioxide from the gas, preparing it for shipment down an 800-mile pipeline with a diameter up to 48 inches, which would accommodate an ultimate capacity of transporting up to 4 billion cubic feet of gas per day. This would allow for considerable expansion down the road. And, of course, there is the LNG plant at Valdez, which chills the gas to a liquid, preparing it for shipment by tanker to the Far East. Obviously, the construction of anything in Alaska involves special considerations, and that is, of course, true for a pipeline as well. The harsh cold weather environment is obviously a challenge, as is the existence of continuous and discontinuous permafrost throughout the area in which the pipeline would be built. The pipeline is envisioned to be a high-pressure pipeline with pressures higher than 2,000 pounds per square inch and with a temperature of less than 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And we also are extremely engaged in consideration of the challenges environmentally as it relates to the habitats of wildlife and migratory herds and birds and streams and rivers containing native fisheries. Also, another challenge is that of minimizing the impact on the ongoing operation of TAPS due to construction and operation of a new gas line. And finally, in this regard, the minimization of the impact on existing Prudhoe Bay operations due to construction and operation of a Trans-Alaska gas pipeline. There also are implementation challenges that we face and are dealing with. And we know that, I'm sure the members of the committee are aware of the fact that over the years, various studies have been commissioned by the legislature, by the administrations of the past, to define a project, to design a project, to market and fund one. The project viability and the schedule driven by energy supply and market conditions never did prove to be of sufficient financial benefits on a private enterprise, strictly speaking, kind of project. The margins were not there, or the market wasn't there, or the supply isn't there. At any rate, what that did was it created a need for innovative and creative public-private initiatives, which is what we are bringing to the table at this time. So why is our project different? Well, fundamentally, the project is different because it offers substantial fiscal advantages to the state of Alaska in order for it to be built, and also fiscal advantages to the builder and the operator. One of the benefits that we enjoy is that we have a single project focus. We have only one thing that we intend to do, and that is to commercialize Alaska gas. We don't have a project anywhere else in the world, and we don't intend to have one. That makes the Alaska Gas Line Port Authority vastly different than any of the previous proposers. They do have competing projects, and they will make decisions, just as they have in the past, on an economic basis as to where they're going to do the project. And we all know they haven't done one yet in Alaska. With our single focus, we think that we can change that, and with the advantages, the fiscal advantages that we bring, we also can affect, move the numbers around considerably and cause to come to existence the right kind of economic playing field that will allow this to go ahead. In resources and infrastructure, in terms of benefits to Alaskans, obviously, the existence of a gas pipeline will provide for many of Alaska's communities to enjoy the advantages of lower power and heating costs. And it also will provide new supplies of energy to stimulate business development statewide, not just in the corridor, not just on the slope, or in Valdez, or in Fairbanks, but statewide. There is the very real potential for a spur line to be constructed to the Cook Inlet to allow for expanded gas supply for consumers there, and also, conceivably, to allow for gas-intensive industrial development to occur. And finally, of interest always when you're tying yourself up to a fuel supply, long-term delivery ability is a very large issue, and we can assure that. Also of benefit to Alaskans would be the existence of over 10,000 construction jobs during the period that the pipeline would be built. And the direct contribution to the Alaska economy at that time would be in the area of $2 to $3 billion as a result of local purchases of goods and services and support to the project. Also of benefit to Alaskans would be the jobs that would be created as a result of the operation of the pipeline, which would involve approximately 400 in-plant and pipeline operations jobs and maintenance jobs, plus the indirect service and support employment that would necessarily result from this kind of activity. All of this would have over $100 million per year impact on the Alaskan economy, and coincidentally, but not of terribly great interest, I suspect, to the committee, but nonetheless, one of great benefit to the United States is that sales of Alaska gas to the Far East would greatly improve the balance of payments problem that has been troubling the federal government for so very long and with which they've been able to deal with it so ineffectively. We buy far too many Toyotas and Nissans and so forth and sell them far too little, and this would greatly alter that circumstance. And, of course, the sale of Alaska gas to the Far East would contribute significantly and directly to the state's treasury. Of benefit also to Alaskans are the environmental considerations, where burning of a clean source of fuel represented by natural gas will result in improved air quality, certainly an issue that faces my community and with which we've had a great difficulty dealing. And it would be an exemplary environmental project adhering to new regulations, making it a model for future Alaska projects. And it would be designed for utmost safety during both the construction and the operation phases. The benefits to the producers would be the commercialization of their leasehold interest in our gas without any capital investment required on their part. Our proposal envisions our providing the capital for the project and would require none from them except perhaps that minimal amount that might be needed for the purpose of infield gathering systems and that sort of thing. It would result in significant revenues to producers as a result of the sale of gas. And of course, that is a matter that needs to be negotiated, and we have had some meetings with the producers in that regard in the past. We hope to have more in the future. And also of benefit to the producers and also to the state of Alaska is the fact that the extraction of gas, the production of gas on the North Slope will have over the long term the result of increasing field life and rates of recovery from the field. As to current activities in which we are presently engaged, what we are doing right now is undertaking examination of the existence of the market in terms of meeting with the markets, which we plan to do in the very near term in the Far East, in those markets including Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and China. And we are also pursuing and have already made application to the IRS with regard to our ruling request regarding the Port Authority exemption from federal income taxes. And that fundamentally is what changes the economics on this project, is the fact that the net revenues that might be derived from the project will not, under our operation, be subject to federal income tax. And that removes a huge burden from this project. And that is fundamentally what moves it from the non-economic to the economic. And so now I would like to turn it over to Brent Scherfe for some discussion on his part about the more technical aspects of the gas pipeline. Brent?
Thank you, Mayor Rowe, and thank you to the committee for allowing us to speak with you this morning. Bechtel Corporation, along with our other participants in the development with Williams and with Taylor DeYoung and financial partner, are actively involved with preparing a study of the entire development process, including numerous technical issues that are confronted by any development on the North Slope. It's certainly involved with the pipelining of gas down through discontinuous permafrost and permafrost and the development of an LNG facility in Valdez. Let me go through very briefly the components of the study that we've been involved with since about the 1st of November. We currently have full-time about 50 technical experts, including financial experts, involved with the study of the process and the development of the facilities. Probably foremost in our review is the regulatory and permitting process and the environmental issues confronting this project. Going back over the last 20 years when it has been studied, one of the key issues of concern, of course, to the state of Alaska and to the United States and our citizens is preservation of the existing habitats and the existing environment and minimizing and mitigating any impacts that such a facility or pipeline would have on the environment, both during construction and long-term throughout the operational period. Critical issue here is of course putting the gas line through very frozen soils and frozen materials, crossing very sensitive streams and rivers, making sure that the preservation of migratory herds and wildlife is not impacted significantly by this project, either in the short term during construction or long term. Also in that process is the review of the coordination with agencies, both state and federal agencies, involved with approval and making sure that that process is moved forward quickly, however, making sure that all of the issues are addressed and the concerns of the citizens are also addressed. Also, in from a very technical point of view, is we prepare a design basis for the gas facility, for the pipeline, and for the LNG facilities and docking facilities at Valdez. This is basically the initial design work on sizing, hydraulic studies, initial process studies, and identifying an optimal combination from North Slope to Valdez of making sure that the design is technically feasible and economically feasible also. Also included is a logistics plan. The amount of material that we are foreseeing being moved throughout the state and into the state probably represents the greatest movement of material that will go on over the next 10 to 15 years, or the first 15 years of the 20th century. 800 miles of pipe, compressor stations, a world-sized gas processing facility, world-sized LNG facility, all the material and logistics of moving that in, purchasing it, transporting it, having it there on time. And in addition is the coordination of that with existing infrastructure, identifying additional infrastructure to be required within the state in order to support that operation. As part of that process is also working closely in identifying local Alaskan sources of materials, equipment, and trying to maximize the Alaskan content and opportunities for both existing Alaskan material suppliers, contractors, and also early on providing information so that over the course of from the time that we can identify material requirements, the times that are needed, that if there are individuals or companies or organizations that could supply this, plan for the supply so that those opportunities are known early on. The opportunities for entrepreneurs to become involved with the project. And so that information process will also be going on shortly. Of course, the construction plan here is the sequencing of the construction process. Construction during the summers, construction during the winters, what is most advantageous, the supply of material in the correct locations, especially over an 800-mile pipeline. The scheduling of that process is very critical. And again, the integration of that into the procurement process, but more importantly, the integration of that into the environmental constraints, environmental requirements that are dictated by the permits and approvals that are secured from the agencies. Also included in that plan is a monitoring, environmental monitoring program. And here again is the assurance that the integration of agency requirements and stipulations are adhered to during the construction process. Monitoring effort in the pipelining and gas facility and LNG facility construction processes is to assure that, first of all the participants understand what is required of them and that we adhere to those requirements. And also, as construction progress progresses, that any adjustments that might have to be made for encounters during construction, that they can be mitigated very quickly. It's a standard process throughout the industry of making sure that those environmental monitoring activities are done, are an integrated part of the construction process. Also is the study of existing labor supply, labor skills within the state primarily. Identifying opportunities for both individuals, organizations, working with closely with the labor unions, and making sure that the skills that are required for construction and future operations of the facility are available, identifying areas where we might have within the state skills that might not be available, and taking the opportunity to develop training programs so that the first opportunities go to citizens of the state of Alaska, and trying to, as much as possible, minimize the import of labor from outside of the state. It's much more cost efficient, the economic impact to the state is much greater when state citizens are employed on a project such as this, as opposed to importing individuals from out of state. So that is one of our key roles, is to try to maximize that state participation. Operations and maintenance plans, of course, this is a function of the final determination of combination of the facilities, but here we identify the process of operating each one of the individual facilities and making sure that the facilities are maintained to the utmost efficiency and utmost safety. Culminating through all these various plans, of course, is a capital cost estimate. Again, we're trying to optimize the combinations of facilities to minimize the capital cost while still meeting the market requirements and conditions of the gas. And of course, quantifying the operation and maintenance expenses over the long term, operating term of the project. Along with this is an economic modeling process and feasibility review, where we're taking a look again at the optimization of the facilities and of the project based on both pricing of gas in the front end and market prices of the LNG at the rear. Commercial structuring, again, is a structuring with among the Port Authority, among its participants. Contractual structuring possibilities with our various contractors will be involved in the project. And the commercial structuring, future operational structuring between both the gas suppliers and the off-takers of the LNG. Preliminary financing plan. Here we're taking a look at the possible alternative financing scenarios, and again trying to maximize minimizing the financing cost, but at the same time within the financial markets of financing programs that are available to us. And finally is a risk assessment, taking a look at the various technical, economic, financial, environmental risks associated with the project to assure ourselves that we have approached this in making sure that all of the various risks have been minimized and mitigated to the satisfaction of both the financial organizations and the authority itself.
And that, Mr. Chairman, completes our formal presentation.
Thank you, and let's now entertain questions from the committee. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how many of you, well, I'm sure the mayors do, that several years ago when we saw the dissipation of so much of Prudhoe Bay's wealth, that there were bumper stickers on most Alaskans' cars saying, give us another one of those and we won't dissipate it, or something to that effect. So I dare say that all Alaskans are extremely interested in and looking forward to some other way to supply some more revenue dollars from the hydrocarbon industry. I have a couple of questions that I'm certainly not opposed to. I want to see the gas line in the worst way, but I'm concerned. In your presentation, you indicated that there would be some 10,000 construction jobs, but most of these, if certainly we're going to concentrate on hiring locally. And just as the problem with the TAPS line, do we have that kind of pool in Alaska that you can do that? Or is that hopeful and not necessarily factual?
Through the chair, Representative Green, Just this morning, as we were concluding the second day of our Board of Directors meeting here in Juneau, the issue of local hire came up. It's obviously of great importance. This project is driven by the participation of three mayors who, believe me, are greatly concerned about and have taken extreme steps to impress upon our contractors the sensitivity that Alaska has to this issue. And to that end, the board has decided that we will begin to contact the labor pool in the form of unions to have them begin on their own initiative training programs that will prepare their memberships for employment on this project. In addition, it is our plan to conduct a contractors' fair, if you will, in probably Fairbanks in the spring, which will bring together all the potential players such as Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, NACHIC, NANA, all of them, and allow the management of the project to describe for them, probably in fairly general terms at that point, what their labor requirements might look like. And in order to allow them to prepare themselves for employment or for engaging in contract discussions and bid proposals and that sort of thing in preparation of construction. We're very, very tuned in to the Alaska hire situation. And unlike a project that might be managed out of Houston, for example, where there allegedly is some sensitivity, our chances of achieving success in the local hire area because of our local involvement in terms of the management of this project through the Port Authority and its Board of Directors, all of them Alaskans, is probably better than any other project that has been undertaken in this state or will be undertaken in the near future. So we're working very hard on that issue.
I might follow up with one other question, Mr. Chairman. You show a 48-inch line with a capacity of up to 4 billion cubic feet a day, which I guess if you were to go that rate, that's about 1.3 or 1.4 TCF a year, which is a significant amount of gas, and that the state would have an impact on our economy of $100 million a year. Now, those are big numbers, but $100 million is a little less than 5% of our general fund right now, which undoubtedly is going to have to do something over this 25 or so year period. My concern is, I guess it's more of a disappointment that there isn't does this $100 million include severance and royalties and all that sort of thing? Because that seems to be a very small amount that the state receives for such a huge amount of gas sale.
There would be several revenue streams to the state of Alaska. Obviously, there is the revenue stream that would come from royalty sales. At the $100 million, I believe you referred to, Representative Green, is the per year impact on the Alaska economy as a result of the operation of the pipeline. The actual range of revenue to the state of Alaska would be in the area of $400 million to $1 billion per year from severance, royalty, and from the income distribution scheme that the Port Authority proposes after the pipeline is constructed.
So this has to do with jobs more than
it has to do with the impact indirectly on the Alaska economy,
yeah.
Not the revenue to the state.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I have two questions. My first is to Mayor Hove. Last year when you folks were before our committee and we discussed the federal income tax exemption, I know that you were in the process of applying for it then. Have you had any indication at all from the IRS if they're moving in it, if they have accepted it, if they're looking at it, or anything?
We, Representative Phillips, through the chair, I think we told you at that time that after we made application to the IRS, we expected that we would have a ruling within 6 months. They are required, I think, within 20 days to acknowledge receipt of our request. They have done that.
When did you send that in?
I believe about the 1st of January or late December. Early
so
December.
So just this month?
Or last month.
Okay.
So we have a few months to go yet.
Okay.
We're no more concerned about unfavorable ruling now than we were then. Should they rule against us, there are all sorts of enterprises across the country that we'll have to reorganize, including, for example, the Port of Tacoma, Port of Seattle, JFK Airport, all of them operated by port authorities or those kinds of organizations.
I was under the impression when you were before us last year that you had submitted that request then.
No, it was in preparation at that time.
Okay. My second question, and this applies to the logistics end of things, and the transportation plan, and I'd like to take everybody back about 20 years ago when we started hauling tons and tons and tons of goods down to Valdez, and all of a sudden we realized the highway that we had in place wasn't going to make it, wasn't going to hold up. And the highway had to be rebuilt after the construction of the gas of the pipeline. Have you guys been in conversation, been in discussion with DOT? Because even though the road is in pretty good shape right now, with this volume of transportation going over it, we're probably going to have to look at something like that again. And have you guys been talking with DOT on this as far as the logistic and construction go?
We haven't had any extensive discussions with DOT. We've had some very initial ones on gathering information. But as far as going through with DOT on specific impacts and securing jurisdictional permits, which DOT would have to do in order to permit the hauling of large quantities and heavy quantities on the roads, that is yet to proceed.
Okay. I imagine it's something we are going to have to look at again.
It's a very significant issue that it will be addressed.
Thank you.
Representative Smalley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday when the report was given to the joint resources, the discussion of permitting took place. And what I heard was that not all of the permits are in hand. And I guess my question would be, do you have a projected time frame window when you would anticipate the permits would be in hand?
The initial permits having to do with the state and federal grants of right-of-way associated with the YPC work have been secured down through the years of the renewal. Going through both the environmental impact statements, there are a number of plans that are stipulated from those statements that still need to be finally developed based on the design of the project. So that process needs to proceed along with that approval. In answer to your question, we anticipate that final completion of all the permits and approvals would take approximately 2 years, but you would progress those in such a way that you might be able to initiate some initial work, for example, long lead items such as tankage work, and cover those with the approval of permits covering those activities initially. So it'd be a sequencing process.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Please.
So if a permit weren't held for the actual facility, the plant itself in the Valdez area, that would still come within that same two-year time frame?
I don't understand the question.
The compressor facility or the building itself in Valdez down at the point. If a permit weren't held for that at this point in time, that would... The assumption is it would be within that same two-year time frame that permitting would... Okay, thanks.
Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned in your presentation that initial expansion capability of to 4 billion cubic feet per day. What's the initial design planned for?
The the numbers we had, the 48 inch and the 4 billion is an ultimate build out. Mm-hmm. Initially, we probably planned for about probably two trains, so someplace between 9 and 10 million tons per year, which would be approximately half, about 2 billion per day.
Okay. I noticed that in the presentation before your group, the North Slope sponsor group had their projections. They wanted to start out with 1.3 billion cubic feet per day with an expansion capability up to 1.8 billion cubic feet per day. So so your project would basically double that.
I have the potential capacity to double it, yes.
Mm-hmm. So well, that's very impressive. And the reason that doubling is possible is because of the federal income tax exemption? Is that a function of that?
I don't think it is a function of that. The fact of the matter is that it would be, if ultimately you think that you can find a market for that much tonnage a year that would need a 48-inch pipe to transport it, it would be probably silly to build a 36-inch pipe, for example, and come along later and only have to build another one in order to satisfy what you ultimately found to be the market demand for your product. It's expensive to lay it in the ground, and you don't want to do it twice. Mm-hmm. So the idea here is to build in the capacity as it relates to the size of the pipeline and then accommodate future increases in demand through the construction of additional compressor stations.
Okay. So then your understanding is that the sponsor group is planning for a 36-inch pipeline?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Just a couple more. This is with the engineers and the technical side. Feeding off a little bit with the issues of the dealing with roads, one of the areas of concern that's starting to pop up in the engineering community is global warming and how it's affecting the infrastructure in Alaska. I went to a workshop in December on it, and one of the areas that they said that we were going to start seeing the first impacts is the Dalton Highway because that of the transition zone between permanent permafrost and intermittent permafrost. And it would seem that the Dalton Highway, it would be also a corridor for transportation of a lot of the equipment and construction materials for your project. So this is just really more of a comment and a FYI type of thing, but I think that you may want to, when you're talking with DOT and talking with in-state engineering operations, you may want to look at coordinating the STIP, which is the State Transportation Improvement Program, with your project, because you may have to have some substantial improvements along the Dalton Highway if you start loading up that road with a lot of additional trucks and the like. The other really a question rather than a statement is the your comments on the piece of legislation that was just before us, House Bill 290. Have you had an opportunity to look at that and how that may affect your organization and your plans?
Through the chair, Representative Kemplin, we have reviewed it, and we find that it has little or no effect on our plans for the construction and operation of this pipeline. And so we, frankly, are kind of neutral on it, at least at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One last one, please.
Yes.
The last slide that you had in terms of economic modeling, feasibility review, commercial structuring. As you're doing your modeling, I'm sure that you are looking at the market and assessing the viability of of putting the natural gas into the market. And we've heard statements, from the other sponsor group about, what's viable, what is your modeling showing? Are you showing the same thing, or are you showing something different? I think you're planning for a much larger amount of natural gas into the market. Why is there a difference?
Well, we're in the process of running our model and developing input to it. Included in that is an analysis of the LNG market and the offtake market, primarily in the Far East. We're experienced in working closely with many of those offtakers in the past on other projects. So that is part of the analysis that is ongoing as we speak. We have done an initial assessment and believe that the market is growing at a substantial enough rate and to continue based on forecasts at that rate in order to accommodate a facility of this size. So there's differences of opinion, of course, in exactly how fast it will grow and how quickly one can penetrate into the market. Again, we're still about halfway through our analysis, but based on the information we have at this point in time, we believe that the market will accommodate a project of this size in addition to other projects that are ongoing and will be brought to market over this time frame.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hank, our first real question is, how did you remember all those names at the reception last night? Did you have it on your hand or your cuff?
There was something in the Chardonnay.
I think I believe you when you say that gas sales will enhance crude recovery. Would you spend a couple of minutes and explain to us how that does and how that fits with maintaining reservoir pressure and gas lift and some of those things?
Frankly, I'm not qualified to do very much in terms of Representative Dyson through the chair, excuse my manners, in terms of explaining that, but I can give you one example, in terms of answering your question, and that would be that a means by which you could extract gas, for example, off of the Point Thompson part of Prudhoe Bay or the Arslope, would allow for the first time oil production off of that unit. That has not yet been able to be accomplished because of the existence of the rather huge gas cap that prevents that from occurring. I would have to defer to other technical experts in terms of field management issues because, frankly, I'm not really that up to speed on it. I would say that we do have someone here who could answer your question. I forgot to mention him before, and I apologize to him for that now. But we recently secured the services on a consultant basis of Jim Weeks, who is a 30-year
We are running a bit short on time, and yes, we will discuss that at a later time. If there are further questions from the committee at this time, we can certainly, Mr. Green, or Representative Green.
Thank you. This question again that Representative Kemplin got started, the window of opportunity and the magnitude of the amount of gas. We've gone through this before, and I'm wondering, is your process built on a minimum size plant? In other words, if the market, A, you find out isn't there, or for some other reason, could you downscale and still prepare and do something like this, or is it based on a high volume throughput?
Through the chair, Representative Green, we're not trying to make the project fit our expectations. Our expectations are instead trying to fit the project. So in that way, we don't want to kid ourselves. Presently, the plan gets the economics get better every time we add a train.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. With just two trains, frankly, the economics aren't very good. If we add two trains to that, they get very good. But our challenge then is to find a market into which to sell the product. The difference between others and us, excuse me, is we don't have gas production facilities in other areas of the world that this gas, Alaska's gas, is going to end up competing with. So our interests are simply and solely one: the production and the commercialization of Alaska's natural gas for entry into a competitive market where that is the only thing we want to do. That is not true of any of the producers currently operating on the slope. It is not true of the sponsor group's backers. They need to meter the gas in to the Far East markets, I believe, in a fashion that provides the least competition to their existing operations elsewhere in the world. And so when you mention production figures and you mention sales opportunities, I believe there are other factors at play for them to consider that we don't have to consider. We're simply engaged in the process of commercializing, finally, Alaska's vast natural gas resource, finding a market for it, and let the chips fall where they may.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I have a host of questions, but the hour is late, and most of you have heard my questions and comments before with regard to Alaska North Slope gas. It is a huge resource. It needs to be taken to market. Many of us are committed to making that happen. So having that said, I will echo the mayor, let the chips fall where they will. We are recessed until 1 o'clock in room 124. And at that time, we'll hear from the Cook Inlet Terminus Group. I find it fascinating that last year we couldn't find anybody interested in North Slope gas, and now there are lots of people interested in it. And that's a very positive thing. I like that. Let the chips fall where they will. We are adjourned until 1 o'clock, room 124. Thank you. Thank you.